Now, earlier this evening I mentioned that I was rather looking forward to the end of my term so I can kick back and rest. It is a lot of work being president of this club, but it's also extremely gratifying. And one of the things that I have done twice so far during my tenure is present an award at the Manitoba School Science Symposium. We present an award to the best astronomy project. And if anybody's ever not been to the Science Symposium, I strongly encourage you make it out. And next year when we're looking for judges, you may want to even go judge events. In addition to some fabulous astronomy projects, there's all sorts of really, really, really exciting stuff that some of these brilliant kids are working on. Typically, we're judging poster presentations, and this is elementary through to high school. This year, we had a presentation of a paper by Elena, and quite frankly, Marlene and I were blown away. There were some really, really good posters, but it was not hard for us to make our decision. And without further ado, I'd like to hand the floor over to Elena Edwards, who's going to present to us on her project on variable stars.
Okay, so over the past, just over a year now, I've been analyzing a suspected variable star corresponding with a professor in Bathurst, Australia. So as technology advances, it allows us to increase our knowledge on different aspects of the world we coexist in. By using these different technological advances and theories, we have the ability to learn more about what we were once unable to explain. One such advancement is the Argo telescope, or Hubble satellite. It was launched on August 8th of 1989, and one of the satellite's responsibilities is to catalog suspected variable stars. So for those of you who do not know what a variable star is, variable stars are stars that change brightness. The changes in brightness of these stars can range from a thousandth of a magnitude to as much as 20 magnitudes over periods of fractions of seconds to years, depending on the type of variable star. The Hipparco satellite has assisted in cataloging over 30,000 variable stars and thousands more which are suspected of being variable. There are two different types of variable stars, intrinsic and extrinsic. Intrinsic variable stars have light variation caused by physical changes in the star. They can further be broken down into pulsating variables and eruptive variables. Pulsating variables show periodic expansion and contraction of the star's surface. When a star experiences radical pulsations, it remains spherical in shape. When a star experiences non-radical pulsations, it may change from a spherical shape to radical. Eruptive variables are also known as cataclysmic variables, and this type of variable occasionally undergoes extreme outbursts by a thermonuclear process in either their surface layers or further into the interior of the star. Extrinsic variables can be identified when the star's variation is caused by smaller, darker stars passing in front of the suspected variable. They are also broken down into two different categories, eclipsing binary and rotating stars. Eclipsing binary stars describe the binary system of the stars when they have an orbital plane lying near the observer's line of sight. The two objects periodically eclipse one another, which causes a decrease in what the observer sees as brightness in the system. Rotating stars from the extrinsic class show small changes in light, which may be caused by bright or dark spots or patches on the surface. Rotating stars which show variability are commonly found in a binary system. Solar stars and irregular stars are two other, they're less common types of variable stars. Flare stars are sometimes known as UV steady stars, and they are intrinsically faint, cool, red, main sequence stars that tend to have immense outbursts from specific areas on their exterior. It results in an increase in brightness in two or more magnitudes in a shorter number of seconds. After afterwards, there's a decrease to its normal minimum to about 10 to 20 minutes. Irregular variables are stars including most of the red giants, are pulsating variables that show brightness variation with either none or slightly slight periodicity. So, with my study, the purposes and goals were to observe and record patterns of the suspected variable stars identified by the Hipparco satellite using a remotely controlled telescope located in Australia. Further, to determine whether or not it was a true variable star, and then if it proves to be true variable, to catalog it as a type. And then further submit the data to the AADSO International Database. Dr. David McKinnon, an associate professor of science and education at Charles Sturt University, residing in Bathurst, Australia, helps students across the world access the stars and other objects in the solar system and universe. So his remote telescope, they can target and observe these objects. The telescope was built by him and resides in his backyard, which he has made accessible and available to schools around the world. They access the telescope through the internet, and they remotely access his desktop and are able to access his programs which run the telescope, so you can control it from where you are. He also and to assist in cataloging them properly. The access and control to the remote telescope is attainable to any personal computer that has the required star and SI software to measure the brightness using differential photometry, which is installed on it. By creating a remote desktop connection to the telescope, the user can control the telescope through the required software. Two cameras on the telescope provide the user with different views of the same image. One camera looks through the telescope lens, magnifying the image of the desired object, while the other camera is placed on top of the telescope to give the user an image through a wide-angle lens aiming at the same area as the sky of the telescope. The program which I did it through was my high school, Mr. Edwards, the astronomy and physics teacher at our school, introduced Dr. McKinnon's program to West Kelowna Collegiate in December 2002. This is just an image of what he does. He has Dr. McKinnon on site video right here, and he displays one section of the room. This is the students who are at the control panel, and they're able to use StarMX 5 and the sky to take the images and control the telescope. And at the same time, Dr. McKinnon is able to correspond with us through Skype video, and he helps give us instructions as images are taken, because sometimes the exposure time is up to like a minute or 2 minutes to get a good image. He answers questions for the students in the class if they have any interest in certain objects or just anything in general. Students in this program, since 2002, have all had the opportunity to experience this with Dr. McKinnon and others. So, when choosing the suspected variable star for the investigation, there were several criteria the star had to meet for my star. The star was required to be about 45 degrees above the Bathurst night horizon and able to be photographed for a minimum of 4 weeks. The star needed to be rising around 5 p.m. in Bathurst, so it would be high enough by 9 p.m. in the evening, so that the sky was dark enough and we could get a decent image. The magnitude of the suspected variable star needed to be between 9 and 10 about, so that the cameras could still take a picture and we have enough information to analyze its magnitude. At least one comparison non-variable star with a magnitude between 9 and 10 would be needed to make brightness comparison. So, in my case, I was able to have two comparison stars in my line of view with the star. So, it just the more comparison stars you have, the higher the statistics and more likely you'll be able to get the more accurate the magnitude can be of the suspected variables are. Out of several potential candidates for experimentation, one was chosen that met the criteria. Its catalog name was SAO154490. It is recorded to be 109.71 light years away and is part of the constellation Hydra. The suspected variable star has two acceptable comparison stars presented in the field of view. Their catalog names were DSD5441:529 and SAO154486. In order to categorize the star, a specific procedure was required called differential photometry, which I mentioned earlier. It compares the brightness of the target star with other comparison stars in the same digital image by measuring the pixel count of the object in the image. The way the procedure went is Dr. McKinnon would take digital images of my choice of SAO154490. So specifically, four images were taken at each observation and then four to me. The first image is a straight image of the object containing information of the light coming from the object in the photograph, plus other components derived from the CCD chip and its electronics. Differential photometry is applied to the straight image in order to eliminate such components derived from the CCD chip so that only light coming from the object in the photograph remains. So I can just point out for you, this is SAO154490, so this is my suspected variable star. Right here is one of the comparison this is the other comparison star. So the second image is a bias frame. It's a 0-second exposure of the image, which measures the small voltage applied to the CCD chip. By detracting the bias frame from the straight image, the effect of the camera's electronics is removed. The third image received is the dark field image. It has the same exposure of the straight image. This frame is taken because the CCD chip is not at absolute zero. So because of this, thermal electrons are created inside the CCD chip, and these must be removed next. Lastly, the fourth image received is the flat field image. This image is an image of a uniformly illuminated object, for example, a twilight sky, or a surface evenly illuminated by light. This frame is designed to correct for the slight unevenness and sensitivity of each pixel across the CCD array. So when these images are combined, it looks very similar to the straight image itself, except now CCD chips, or CCD, the pixels that are added because of the CCD chip and the camera are removed, so I don't have extra pixelation when I'm measuring the magnitude. The entire process is done through a program called StarMagnify. And through the program, astronomers are able to view digital images of the objects in space to measure features such as brightness or position. This is just pointing out again the location and relation of the stars to each other. A total of 15 images were taken over a period of 55 days. It was not possible to take images on 40 nights due to several conditions, mainly bad weather within the period. So this table just represents, this is the magnitude final, like, after compared to the stars. So knowing the magnitudes of SAO154486 and GSD5441:529, I can take a magnitude difference of each star and then apply the magnitude difference to what was suspected of the SAO154490, and then when you average them out, they come up to this. These are just the date and time of when the observations were taken. This is the graph. So when graphed, it shows there isn't much variation with like these are the two comparison studies that you're seeing here. And this one shows the very slight variation that occurs within the magnitude of the suspected variable set. Because over the period of the 55-day period, the weather didn't allow for very many images, and it really makes it difficult to tell if this is correct or not. So the next step, because I was actually unable to conclude my observations as to if it is or is not variable, the next step is to take a 400 millimeter refracting lens and place it behind the camera or in front of the camera. So we're going to take more images this time over a new period of time once the actual telescope and box is built, and it will give me probably closer to 10 to 15 comparison stars, which will increase the statistics of whether or not it's variable. These results as of now can either be concluded as not variable, or it could be an intrinsic variable or an extrinsic variable star, which could possibly mean a planet or other types of celestial bodies orbiting the star, which is why it's such a low magnitude change for the star, but could still possibly be variable. So that's about it. Are there any questions? I picked the star because Dr. McKinnon's program, when I accessed his telescope, he has a program called the Sky, and it allows us, I took the criteria, so the 45 degrees above the horizon in like the eastern hemisphere in Bathurst, so that when we took the images, like there were several, but in the area, like because the criteria is so specific, that there are a very minimal amount of variable stars that actually fit into it during the period of when I was doing it, which was between, I think, the beginning of March to the end of May. So, since it fits, most variable stars we found had, like, magnitude 11 or 13, which is too faint to take the images. So, this one fit, and it had two comparison stars, which was a lot more convenient to take. So, it was one of the
choices.
What means you are attempted or expected to study stars? What way does that go? I'm not 100% sure. I suspect that because the Hubble telescope catalogs the stars, it kind of goes through them and, like, since this star, they couldn't get a standard magnitude, it can have kind of a suspected magnitude, but never, like, certain ones have set magnitudes, and you know that they are. Like, I think SAO154486 was 9.3, and that didn't change. But with SAO154490, the suspected variable star, they couldn't get a definite answer, and then they catalog them as suspected variables, and then leave it to amateur astronomers like myself to kind of analyze it over a period of time. And I look at it.
What is it that drove your interest in this particular observation project?
With variable stars? Well, when I kind of got interested in astronomy, I went to Mr. Edwards and just asked for certain projects that I could do, and he set me up with some kind of home experiments I could run. And I kind of went at the time after Dr. McKinnon came here about, I think, a year ago or a year and a half ago. And I went to him right after Dr. McKinnon had left, and since Mr. Edwards and Dr. McKinnon had been working together for so long, they kind of corresponded and said, like, another student in grade 10 do it once, and so he suggested that maybe I try it and look for it, since it's very interesting, and it kind of gives you some good experience with was astronomy. I actually can't. I'm not totally sure.
Is it done within that program you're referring to?
The next slide. That's a good question. Yeah, I can actually do an example of differential photometry that shows. Okay. Would it be? Yeah. Program. Now, I don't think it's actually used to determine all the magnitudes of stars, that's what the Hargreaves satellite does, but once it has cataloged it as perspective variable, we can do it through this program. So I would open, so what was the drive for the flash drive? So this is just an example. This is the third image I took. This is a straight image. So what I do is I go to, I would subtract the dark frame first, or sorry, the bias frame first, which really, it doesn't change the image much to the naked eye. It's just taking away different pixels. Then I take away the dark image and apply the flat field. So once I can do this, I go into photometry of image. I change the pixelation to 7 pixels. This makes it the most accurate. First, I would put the cursor over the star. This is vector variable, then select comparison, and bring the crosshairs over the comparison star, and make sure that the background is zeroed out. And this number right here is my magnitude difference between the perspective variable and the comparison. And then as I average each one out, like as I apply it, and then average them out, it gives me what is the best we can get for magnitude of the actual star. I don't know if that really answers your question. We can get a definite uncertainty. Really, because it was only 15 days, 15 observations over 55 days, there's, you can see in the graph, I don't know if I can pull it up here. Sorry, I'm having a difficult. This one? Oh, here. The graph itself, there's a large gap of when we didn't, it went maybe a couple weeks without being able to get actual, because just in batteries, if there's clouds or anything, it totally throws it off, so we couldn't take images unless it was a really clear sky. I'm sure most of you know how hard that is again. So, it's it makes it very hard to tell, like, if there is an actual, like, with the person who did it in bachelor's to Dr. McKinnon, there was obvious changes in magnitude, but there's large periods of time where I couldn't tell if, you know, that is varying or not. So until we set it up, like, he sets it up with a box, and then the 400mm refracting lens is going to give me a huge field of view that I can still get this star, the other two comparison stars, along with about 13, 14 other stars. And that, if that's still showing up like this, then it's likely that it's not variable or there is something rotating around it. And then once we determine that, the next step would be probably using spectroscopy methods to determine whether or not there is something orbiting around the star. Yeah? This one? Just from the catalog from Hipparcos, but they're just catalogs, they're not variables. They have a standard magnitude that are just like 1-3 magnitude. For this case, Dr. McKinnon just took them whenever there was a clear night. So between March and the end or the beginning of May. Yeah, and then he would send them to me, and when I received them, I just pull up, open the different for the StarMX slide and calculate it. Yeah, he did that part for me. I've used the site to show me in school, and it's really amazing what you can do with the images and just take them, because it's neat, because the servers also sometimes would open up. He has an infrared camera inside the it was kind of like a little shed that holds the telescope. And it has a camera on the telescope, so students can watch the telescope glued to the object, and that's them controlling it from Canada when the telescope itself is in Australia. But for these observations, yeah, he took them and then sent them to me. I would really like to go further with it and see if I can determine if it is extremely